Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. This is NXT for October the 11th, 2022. If you could hear the music that we hear before we go live from our blog host, you would know why it's stuck in our heads all the time. Guys, just it's the little things in life. And not having to hear that music would be a little thing that would be so appreciated. I'm Kelly Wells, and I have an interesting last half hour, but let's get to NXT. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk, at spookymilk.games. Also, you can call the show at 515-605-9345 or email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. A very busy show, 8 matches, which they rarely do, and also more segments than they usually do. I barely got this onto a full page. Quite a bit going on here. 52 plus minutes of wrestling. Didn't feel like there was a real sense of urgency ahead of Halloween Havoc. Not in comparison with some previous weeks, actually. Just felt more like a transitional show getting us to a few places. Moving forward as many TV feuds as we did feuds for the PLE Saturday after next. So let's talk main event. For quite a while, we didn't know it was going to be. This match wasn't made until later in the show. And then they did the old trick of when they know they don't have like a super marquee main, they just don't tell you what the main is going to be. They got all the matches we knew about out of the way, basically in the first half of the show. And we ended with Ilya Dragunov versus Grayson Waller. This goes 11:07. It was decent. I think these two are capable of more, but they did not pull that out here. Ilya, of course, goes over with the Torpedo, formerly the Torpedo Moscow, which they are not calling out anymore as Torpedo Moscow. And Bron Breakker, who won, let's roll these two matches together. Why not? Bron Breakker won the opener against Javier Bernal in 3:22. I thought this was pretty decent outing for Javier Bernal. Just enhancement here. Got in very, very little offense, but I thought he was fine. JD McDonough shows up after that match. Ilya Dragunov shows after that. And in trying to lay out McDonough with the Torpedo, McDonough moves. He hits Breakker with it. Very, very, very clearly an accident. But Bron Breakker is a Steiner, so he can't read context. So at the end, he attacks Ilya after your main event and lays him out while JD McDonough just smugly looks on and claps as we end the show. You know what? Those bookends make me decide that I am leaning slightly thumbs up on an episode where I was just like, it was so frenetic. I didn't know whether I liked this one or not. It was crash TV, folks. But we got Bron and Ilya going over in your opening and closing matches. Bruce Lee, who are you, and what did you think of the bookend?
I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. I am the other NXT writer for us. I'll be going next week. And it wasn't just that these were bookended. It's that it was an unexpected bookend, even though I probably should have been expecting Breakker to come out and get his, receipt for Dragunov landing the head. But I don't remember much about the first match, but that's probably because the match after it was so much better. This main event, like you said, it was serviceable. You know, having a commercial break always hinders things, especially because on the USA Player online, I get full screen. So if they go to split screen, I don't get to see any of the action. But even on split screen, it's hard to watch the action. Yeah, like you said, Vic emphatically said Torpedo by itself twice tonight, when he landed it on Breakker on accident and then when he landed it on Waller to finish the match. My big thing here is, what the hell are we doing with all these stupid, these distraction or contrived finishes, tonight being the main event, tonight being just the epitome of that? Like, where did the wheel come from all of a sudden? How did Waller not notice it until he got right next to it? And how did it start spinning? And why did the Tron go? Like, all this stuff just, yeah. So, I guess that aside, you know, it's an expected outcome to the event. They protected Waller somewhat, and they gave each, you know, McDonough's the only one who really came out of unscathed tonight, I think, even from the opening segment, but everyone kind of had their moments. He gets the creepy smile to finish it off in his velvety blue, like, I don't know, butler blazer almost. So, yeah, the triple threat should be fine Saturday from this upcoming one, but I'm not sure if this main event did anything to make me more interested in either the triple threat or what's going on between Apollo Crews and Waller. So I guess in that regard, this was kind of a downer of a main event, but at least that they had that book in there, which, like I said, for me was unexpected. So it does help. It helps dispel a little bit of the sentiment of it being kind of lackluster.
You know, basically every scene that Apollo Crews or Grayson Waller has been in the last 3 weeks has made me want to see the match less. And it's made it
yeah.
And it's made it less necessary because, like, Waller's just getting absolutely flattened every time that he goes out there. So, like, what does Apollo gain by beating him? And if he doesn't beat him, what does he lose? I don't know. Pretty rough. Nate, take it away.
I was going to make a racial joke right there, but I decided to hold against it.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, with that, hi, everybody. I'm Nate. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg, and I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you to check out for tonight. So one thing you guys missed here, they foreshadowed this great bookend, last week when they announced Booker T for commentary, because his finisher is the bookend. So come on. We should have seen that. Anyway.
I tried not talking about him tonight.
I
bring him up?
I saw the joke, had to make it, whether it was good or not.
Did you?
But I did. I did. I would have been disappointed with myself if I didn't, and it would have bothered me for the rest of the night. I'll start with the opener. I thought this was actually a pretty decent opener for Bernal. I feel like that was, like, obviously biggest match of his career. If I had to take a stab in the dark, I would say it's probably his biggest match of his career, going up against the champion of the division he's in. And I think he pulled it off. I mean, obviously it was, you know, a squash for the most part in Breaker's favor, but he did get a little bit of offense in there. And what I did see, I think he looked pretty good. I don't think, we're going to be seeing him at the top of the card anytime soon. But, from what we did see, I liked it. As Kelly said, Bron Breakker is a Steiner, so he could not understand that Ilya Dragunov hit him by accident. However, Ilya Dragunov did say in the middle of the night that the ring, in an interview with Mackenzie Mitchell, that the ring is a war zone. And in so many words, you know, if you're in the ring, you better be prepared to be taken out. I don't remember exactly how he worded it. He made it sound a lot better than me. But, you know, if you're in the ring, you know, there's no teams. You're going to get your ass kicked. So that's kind of where he lied with that. So it didn't necessarily surprise me to see Bron Breakker come out at the very end. I wasn't thinking about it. Like, it wasn't anything that's fresh in my mind when it happened. But, you know, it was a nice little surprise there. I did like the, you know, kind of the consistency in the bookend as well. I am looking forward to the triple threat between McDonough, Ilya Dragunov, and Bron Breakker. Ilyanov? Yeah, I know. I've been gone for a week and my brain doesn't work anymore. Not like it ever did. Who am I kidding? I am looking forward to it. As you know, as you guys know, I'm not usually a proponent of triple threat matches, but for some reason I have an intrigue here. I think it's because Bron Breakker brings the powerhouse side of the, you know, kind of powerhouse to the table. He's certainly green. He's got some, you know, room to grow, but, you know, for what he is, he's not bad. He's going to bring that power side to the powerhouse side of the of things to that match. And then the other two are going to do exactly what they do best, and they're going to do some amazing technical and high-flying wrestling. And I feel like the three of them could make, especially under the tutelage of, like, Triple H and Shawn Michaels, could make a really good match with a cohesive story for the main event of Halloween Havoc. I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm kind of surprised I'm saying it, but I'm looking forward to it. As far as like Waller and Apollo Crews goes, yeah, I'm kind of also there with you, Kelly. Like the more I see of these backstage vignettes and things, the less I want to see. Everything with Apollo Crews since his debut has just been so weird. From the bleeding eye to the vigilante vignette, that's the word I'm looking for, from the vigilante vignettes and in the vignette tonight. Everything's just, it doesn't seem cohesive. It's so weird. I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it, but it doesn't seem to make sense to me. I feel like they want it to make sense. It just isn't. Waller, I feel like he's kind of just in a holding pattern until he gets called up. I feel like it's quite literally just a matter of time before he gets called up to the main roster. And until then, he's going to do what he keeps doing and he has been doing for the last seemingly months at this point, is just building feuds with top talent in NXT and then putting them over. And I feel like he can do that. He doesn't seem to lose anything when he does it. He still comes over as an annoying, arrogant prick every time he's on the screen. And when he loses, like, he just kind of gets right back up and he's got an excuse for why he lost. And the next thing you know, everybody forgets about the loss and he's right back up on the main, you know, in the main event or in the main event scene. So I don't think Waller has anything to worry about. But yeah, that's kind of my two cents on those two matches.
All right. Again, it is 515-605-9345. Let us go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland, and see what he thought. Ryan, a whole lot going on this show. Hopefully some good stuff to take from it. What did you think?
Now, it was a lot happening and very interesting show.
Yeah, we got some talking points, I'll give it that. But when you have like 40 segments, you'd better. What do you have for us?
First question is on Roderick Strong. Do you feel he's going to be the one that costs the Creed brothers the match and the ambulance match? Because it feels like he might be doing the Marcus Alexander Bagwell gimmick from WCW, wearing that neck brace and then trying to get sympathy, you know, acting like the good guy, but then he turns out to be a real jerk.
That's a very good question, and part of the reason it's so hard to answer is that Roddy is so bad at acting, I don't know what to take from his performance.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
I knew what you were going to say before you even said it, Kelly.
Yeah, and I knew from your laugh, you're like, I know where he's headed with this. Yeah, he's just, I like Roddy so much. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's just a great technical wrestler, and he seems like he'd be a pretty damn okay guy. But, man, he just still continues to sound like a real human being when he's talking. This scene was, it was good by his standards, even though it's a weird, you know, a place kind of meant to look like a hospital waiting room that isn't. And Ivy Nile rolls him out on the wheelchair. And, you know, to take a positive from this, Ivy has been pretty rough on the mic. And I thought what little she had to do, she was pretty good in this week. And then, of course, he's talking and, like, making up with the Creed brothers. The music swells. It's like it's going into the big game at the end of a sports movie. This was so bizarre. I don't know why this scene was the way it was. And I'm not actually sure I disliked it. I was just so thrown by it. I was like, what are they doing? This is so goofy. But it definitely was harmed by feeling so epic, but being shot in what looks like just somebody's empty corner in an extremely low-budget movie. And they already have Kiana James's segments for that. Like, she's got that market cornered.
I just thought they outsourced those to Brazzers.
Wow.
We're seeing the same thing. Like, it looks intentional, because her scenes look intentionally cheap. We'll get there. So I don't know what to take from Roddy's performance. My early read is that this is a genuine kiss and make up from the group. I don't know that I see Julius losing this. There's interesting storylines either way. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Either way. But I don't know that I see him losing it. I see this as a continued redemption story for Roddy, even if he ends up having to enhance Damon Kemp, which he will. Nate?
So I kind of see it the same way. I think that this entire time, for this entire, the entire time we thought that Diamond Mine was going to be breaking up, you know, week after week we were talking about it. I think that Roddy was just the red herring. We were supposed to think it was Roddy behind all this the whole time, and it turned out to just be Damon Kemp. And I think that's the story they're trying to tell us right now. Whether or not that was the plan the whole time, I have no idea, but that's the way it feels right now, especially tonight. I agree 100%. Roddy's acting is the biggest X factor here, biggest variable, I guess, not X factor, but variable, I guess, is the best way to put it, because it came off like he was trying to be sincere and, you know, giving a sincere apology and try to sound like, yeah, he legitimately was sorry for bringing Damon Kemp in and maybe losing his temper here and there, whatever. Yeah, he didn't quite get into that, but, you know, it kind of felt like it was all implied. But by the same token, his acting's so bad where you're kind of like, well, was that actually legitimately, like, he was really being sorry? Like, he's really sorry. He's genuine. That's the word I was looking for. Genuine. So yeah, I don't really know. I'm going to kind of take it at face value for right now, because that's the way it feels, the way that the story has progressed thus far, at least the way they've been telling it, and the way that it kind of seems like they're trying to push Damon Kemp as a heel. It does seem like it's a bit of a redemption story for Roddy. It also seems like it's a way to push Julius Creed, because Julius is between the two of them, nothing to really, not trying to take anything away from Brutus. Brutus is a force to be reckoned with in and of himself, but Julius is, he's a standout as far as I'm concerned between the two of them. You know, he's not only is he a little bit bigger, but I think he's also a little bit better on the mic. I think they're pretty comparable in the ring, but Julius definitely stands out a bit more. So I feel like he is going to be the one to get the win here. It's going to be a feel good story for everybody when it does happen. And I think we may actually see Diamond Mine stick around. I don't know. I'm kind of surprised to say I'm saying that, but after what we saw tonight, I'm kind of giving it, I'm going back to like 50-50 that they're either going to stick around or go away. Before tonight, I was like, Diamond Mine has maybe a few weeks left. However, I've been saying that for like 4 months now. So, you know, there's that.
Well, I've been saying that, Cameron Grimes was going to leave
exactly,
for like 2 years.
Exactly.
Right. You know, Shayna Baszler's going to lose the NXT title anytime now, you know?
That was Tom's biggest one.
Right.
Yep.
What the payoff here needs to be is Damon Kemp's secret partner is Tyler Rust, who was excommunicated from the Diamond Mine.
Or Kenzo Suzuki.
Too early.
Kenzo Suzuki. I forgot. What the hell was that dude's name? Was that his name?
Hatchaman was that guy. Kenzo Suzuki goes back
Hatchaman,
to...
Right. Oh, yeah. Wrong one. Oh, yeah, Hatchaman.
Ever...
I knew that wasn't the right name. I just couldn't think of his name.
Compared
name either.
To Kenzo Suzuki. They could have brought over,
you know what,
anybody.
Just make it even zero at this point.
Headway. Kenzo Suzuki and Rene Dupree were tag team champions, folks.
That's right. That's right.
I try not to think about that. Those are dark times.
I haven't thought about that for a really long time.
I mean, the Bashams were also tag team champions for a long time, too. So.
Right. We're a bit off the rails.
At least the Dicks weren't.
Bruce, did I throw to you yet?
No, you did not.
You just went off the rails instead.
Which is pretty much standard.
So what happens when you get all three of us here?
I guess the one thing I noticed was that Julius said hospital. He didn't say local medical facility, so at least that's still there. Roddy tried his best with the neck brace to make it look like he didn't actually have a neck injury, but you can still see him moving his head a bit. But aside from that, I think I didn't get any sort of Roddy's actually going to betray them. This is all a setup. I felt like this was a genuine thing. And I guess the biggest lesson to learn from this is a lot of things would be just solved and figured out before they come to a head like this if men would just talk things out. So, yeah.
Just hug it out, guys. Just hug it out.
Go to therapy, something.
Yeah. I'm sitting here. See, I'm hung up on, is it worse for Nate to forget the word genuine or to say alien?
I mean, you know what, Kelly, when I'm not here, you miss me. You do.
I forgot the word for microwave for like 2 straight years.
Hold on. Okay.
That sounds like an exaggeration. That
I want to know, what the hell did you do when you walked into the kitchen and you were like, hey, daughter, can you clear box me this?
I didn't have daughters at the time. I was a young gent.
Oh, so it 16. Just was.
My brain was.
It was the drugs.
At this point,
it was
how much weed were you smoking?
That's definitely possible. Yeah. I mean, more than some. But but I'd like try to refer to the microwave in a way that would hopefully make the other person say what it was called. I swear this happened. And maybe I'm doing a bit. I can't remember anymore. But I think I'm almost positive this is real. Again.
Maybe it's still the drugs.
Folks, we live in a simulation.
We do. Ryan, if you waited us out, go ahead.
Next question I have is on Mandy Rose. Do you think Sonya Deville may get revenge on Mandy by stealing her girls and creating her own new stable, thus turning Mandy into a baby face?
I hope so.
You know,
I hadn't thought about that, but
I
hope so.
I would be the two, and I wrote that in the recap about how this shed some genuine doubt again on who really might be the one to take this championship from her and where things are headed, because it's hard to know whether Sonya is in Toxic Attraction. I would slightly lean no, or if she's just going to be a temporary ally. So this all stems from the Alba Fire versus JC Jane match. Alba goes over in 3:35, as you would think. Her attempt at her senton finisher is thwarted, thank God, and she does the gory bomb and finishes with that instead. Hopefully, the experiment of the stupid rolling senton from the top, which I hate that finish, because if it's done properly, it doesn't look like it hurts. And if it's done improperly, it absolutely does. Yeah, just not a good finisher. But Alba Fire goes over, of course. Sonya Deville shows up in a hoodie. You know, a lot of hoodies masking people in NXT these days. But attacks her from the audience as Fire is leaving in a genuinely surprising moment. They even warned us there was going to be a surprise. And then when it happened, I was like, oh, right. Goes on the offensive. I'm just glad to see Deville getting something to do and to be a little bit rehabilitated, because she did such great work as a non-wrestling character that it's just a bummer that she's essentially been enhancement for months now. But yeah, she's got something going on, and I like that Mandy wasn't there so they can drag this out a little bit, and we can find out what we have. Does Mandy turn face without Toxic Attraction? I think that would be a mistake. I think that they are the group that should go to the main roster together. But this would also give Sonya Deville something to do if she did that. Or is Sonya just fake joining them to infiltrate and then turn against Mandy, but continue to be the babyface? I definitely ask myself all those same questions, and I'll probably have a better idea of where they're headed next week. For now, I'm going to say they will be together. God, but the best time for them to split and have it be a false alliance would be Halloween Havoc. Bruce, tell me what my opinion is.
Your opinion is probably the same as mine because I tweeted out, are they going to trade Sonya Deville for Mandy Rose? How the process went to develop, but eventually is Mandy going to Raw or SmackDown and is Sonya going to be on NXT moving forward? So I think Nate was the only one who didn't catch up on that or didn't catch that while we're watching because it seems like a small sample size out of the four of us, three or four caught on to that. So I must say most of the fans who are watching had some kind of thought regarding Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose potentially switching spot. And in what you were saying, Kelly, in the promo later, or the backstage segment with Mackenzie Mitchell, which please just never take Mackenzie Mitchell away from NXT, no matter what changes happen. Just please keep her there.
Leave her forever.
I thought Sonya Deville gave what I thought might have been the best promo I've heard her ever give. And it was just every word seemed to have a purpose. Nothing seemed to be overly scripted or full of all those nonsense words, jargon, phrases that just mean nothing. And she was confident, and it sounded like she believed what she was saying. In what she was saying, she said that she is Mandy Rose's best friend, and regardless of what differences they may have had in the past, she's always going to be there for her. So that could be the seed they lay down to where maybe Mandy gets jealous that she came to help her girls out when she wasn't there, and it leads to something happening in Halloween Havoc, or Sonya is the one who does challenge her for the title. Maybe it becomes a friendly rivalry and she's the one who beats her. And I don't know, but whatever happened, at least at this juncture, I'm more interested in Toxic Attraction than I have been in a long time, just because I feel like Mandy Rose's title reign has been so stale. Just because it's similar to Shayna Baszler in that, you know, she's going to win, but it's different in that it's just not entertaining.
You know she's going to win,
yeah,
but you don't want her to win.
Not producing any good matches?
Well, I didn't want Shayna Baszler to win either, but her matches and her promos and her segments were all just like, she was the one where it's like Grayson Waller right now. You wanted to see her get her ass whooped even though you knew it wasn't going to happen. Well, with Waller, you know it's going to happen, but you know what I'm trying to say. So I feel like now I have more interest in what's going to happen within the group and how that affects them once they go outside of themselves moving forward with now, I guess, a four-person crew. So, I'll leave it at that for now.
Nate on the Sonya Deville side.
Yeah, so I didn't really think about, and I'm sure it would have come to mind, but it didn't really occur to me at the time about Sonya maybe replacing Mandy as the leader of Toxic Attraction and Mandy cutting off and kind of doing her own thing. I'm actually, like, the more I think about it, the more I'm so in favor of that. I care more about Toxic Attraction than I do about Mandy Rose. I've grown to kind of like Mandy at this point. She's certainly not one of my favorite wrestlers in NXT, but she's done a halfway decent job in the position that they put her in. It's definitely become stale at this point, though. She needs to lose the title. It needs to kind of move on to somebody else, and they kind of need to advance that division a little bit. I feel like, I don't know if Sonya is necessarily the person to dethrone her, although I could see that, and it'd be kind of cool to see. I think Sonya would be the person to cause her to lose the title to whoever. I don't know who that's necessarily going to be. All the Fire, probably, maybe. But Sonya Deville causes that with Toxic Attraction. They're the reason she loses the title. And then Sonya brings Toxic Attraction up to the main roster. I think Sonya just has much more of like a bad girl vibe to her than Mandy Rose does. And Mandy more seems more like the Mean Girls type of a, you know, bad guy, Mean Girls type of a heel, where Sonya Deville is more of like a badass type of heel. And I feel like Toxic Attraction, that's kind of the way they've been leaning. They don't feel like they kind of, when they were, you know, playing like the high school bullies, essentially, like they feel like they're, or I feel like they're, they're not doing that naturally. It's it doesn't feel like it's a natural role for them. But trying to be more of like just badass women, that I think they can pull off. I think they can pull that off Harley and very easily with Sonya Deville. So, and I think that could probably get a lot of eyeballs on that act on the main roster. So I don't know. I don't know exactly where that leaves Mandy Rose either. I mean, I feel like she's probably going to flounder a little bit after that, but at the same time, I think that would be a little bit better for business. So that's kind of a, that's my two cents at least going into this anyway. Yeah, we'll see what happens as time plays out, time goes on. But I really like that idea. Plus, I think at this point, they've learned enough, they being JC and Gigi, they've learned enough from Mandy. It's kind of time for them to kind of, you know, take some lessons from Sonya Deville. She's got a lot to teach as well.
Real quick, did either of you catch if they named Alba Fire's Gory Bomb or if they just said something
they
like,
called
oh,
it a,
she
they
is.
Said Gory
they
Bomb.
Called it a Gory Bomb.
Okay, I missed it. Okay, so at least, I mean, Fire Bomb is right there. I don't, okay, all right.
Yep, it's weird. They've been calling it the Gory Bomb ever since it stopped being the KLR Bomb, which, of course, you got to stop when KLR is not in her name anymore. Although you could keep it around, whatever. But, yeah, they've just been calling it the Gory Bomb ever since then. Ryan, go ahead.
Any question on this mystery tenant for Stax? Any possibility could be Tony D'Angelo, or do you think it's going to be some? Who else do you think it could be besides him?
This one's a really interesting question. I don't see Tony being ready yet based on his non-contact injury, and usually those take time. I haven't even given myself a chance to think about who this could be yet. This could be a returning person. This could be somebody coming down from the main roster for more seasoning or coming down from the main roster just for one match. We know that Stax's old partner, I don't think it's been a year yet. I mean, time flies.
Yeah.
And I never know how long it's been, but he could have fished him out of the river and thrown him in a match. Other than that, I'm not sure. Like this whole group, they don't have any more people. But I don't, gosh, I guess I assumed in the moment it would be somebody from the main roster, but I don't immediately come up with anyone who seems like they would be like, oh yeah, Tony D, let me do this for you. It seems like a spot that does make more sense for a debuting wrestler. But how many wrestlers do you debut across your various brands before it's too many? Nate?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really don't know who this is going to be. I've been trying to think about this myself, and then I kind of forgot about it, and then we started the show, and now I'm going, crap, yeah, I haven't really given this much thought. I don't think it's going to be Tony D'Angelo. Like you said, these non-contact injuries are usually kind of serious. I was actually even surprised to see him on TV tonight, to be honest with you, which, you know, maybe is a good sign that it isn't quite as bad as we thought. And maybe he's going to be back in the ring sooner rather than later. But, we'll see what happens. I don't really know exactly the extent of that injury. But I don't know. It's weird because there's part of me that thinks that it's going to be some crazy opponent, that it's going to be hard for him to beat and what, you know, some major test, right? Because that's kind of the way it feels. And then there's another part of me that feels like, you know, it's going to go the way of like old Vince McMahon and they're going to just bring out a couple midgets and call it something. I don't know, you know? So I'm kind of torn. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to be doing here, who it's going to be. I have a feeling it's going to be some sort of a test for Stax. Probably somebody that needs to debut, but I have no idea. I have no idea who this could be. Like if we didn't see Sangha and Veer Mahan on the show tonight, I would have said maybe them, but the fact that they showed up and they're, you know, kind of just even in a brief little cameo thing, I don't know. I have absolutely no idea who this could be.
I think this too could be Tyler Rust. I'm hoping to see Tyler Rust in as many
that'd be awesome.
Segments next week. Yeah, he went to New Japan and was wrestling semi-regularly on New Japan Strong. And like 2 or 3 months ago, it just totally stopped. And I don't know what he's up to. And the guy just does not tweet. So so I should dig a little deeper to find out what one of my favorite wrestlers is doing. Bruce.
So let's just take a step back real quick and look at the brand as a whole. We have this mystery opponent. We have Cameron Grimes' mystery partners, if he has any. We have Pick Your Poison. So we're having a lot of these mystery partner matches, and when you have to resort to this many in that little time, I makes you think you don't have that much faith in what you're booking right now, unfortunately, and you're trying to rely on the pop or the mystery pop to really retain interest. So that's probably not a good thing. When we're looking at, you know, this situation with Stack, D'Angelo said tonight that him in the back does give credence to the idea that it could be him or it could be Troy, I think, Two Diamonds Donovan was his nickname, because of the fact that he said, you know, when you beat that guy up in fifth grade for cutting you in line or whatever, and then D'Angelo said, it's something like that. So maybe he's upset that Stax last week went out ahead of him and made a match for himself. Maybe Donovan is upset that he got thrown in the river, wherever the hell they threw him into. So I think they at least laid groundwork for that here. If it's not one of them, then all they need to do once they do reveal who it is have them cut something in the back after the match, which after they presumably win, about why this person came, was the person that was chosen, and just make a quick made-up story or something. But obviously, it's going to be Little Guido. We all know that. Beyond that, though, I guess you could bring in someone. For this one specifically, it's tough. I just don't know if, like, anyone on the Colt main roster that has connections to D'Angelo, I don't think would do this for him, right? Brawling Brutes are kind of now more face, and D'Angelo is supposed to be a heel, so I don't think Butch would come down for that. Tommaso Ciampa, maybe, but it doesn't seem like he want to waste a Ciampa appearance on a match of Stacks. So I'm not really sure about that. I do have some ideas when it comes to the other ones, but for this one, it's just
Timothy Thatcher.
Okay, that would be a good one. I just don't know how they would tie it into it. Again, they would have to somehow. Maybe Timothy Thatcher was one of the kids in line and he got sucker punched during the fight or something. I don't know. But Thatcher would be good, and it helps if actually happened over the weekend. That would be a good idea. And if not him, then obviously you got to go with Hank.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
What I took from it is this. When Troy Donovan returns, I just want a scene of him walking out of the river. And and his new gimmick is he's old Greg. That's what I want. I don't know if you
I'm old Greg.
Okay. I knew you'd know old Greg.
Drink Bailey's from a shoe.
Oh, boy. Okay. Lest I go on another diatribe. Ryan, if you've got one more.
Not really related to Shib, but Hurricane Ian, has that impacted NXT in any way as far as like wrestlers needing any time, like extended time off, or not being able to make any of the towns that they normally go to, or any other disruptions that you've heard of?
I have not. And Tom is down there, Tom Stout, and I asked him about that kind of vaguely, and it doesn't sound like that has affected anything. Now, in Florida, they try to work through everything. they don't shut down anything for any reason. Pandemic's nothing. They just don't do it. So I have not heard of that happening, which is crazy because the stuff that happened in Japan, it wiped out like a week and a half of New Japan's really important shows. Like, most of their house shows are total nothing burgers. They got like four in a row that are all important, and they all get wiped out. But, you know, earthquakes there and stuff. They got to, you know, take that seriously. So, yeah, knocked out those. I have heard thing about that, about any changes to what they've done with Hurricane Ian and having Tom down there. That's the kind of thing that I think he'd just tell us outright, unless Bruce or Nate, have you heard differently at all?
So I'm doing just some quick Googling right now. And from what I understand, at least from something I'm reading from a few weeks ago, about a week and a half ago, it looks like they closed the Performance Center right before Hurricane Ian, and they just kind of got lucky. You know, they really didn't take any damage, and, you know, they've kind of just been able to stick to business as usual.
All right. Well, we thank you, as always, Ryan, for the call, and we will go talk about a few other matches. Let's go to Axiom versus Nathan Fraser. Best of three finisher here. Also, winner moves on to the ladder match. I half expected a draw here that would put both guys in the ladder match. I maybe more than half expected it until the match started, and I just thought, oh, do they do another draw in a best of series like they did that with Sheamus and Cesaro just a couple of years ago? And by a couple, it was probably a lot. Time flies when you're old.
Yeah, that was like four or five.
Yeah.
It's got to be at least six. I'm going to say at least six.
I think that's possible.
All right, now I'm going to do the Google. And
all right. Nathan Fraser goes over in this one, 12 minutes and 53 seconds. If I have a single gripe, and I do, it's that basically no guy ever sold anything that happened to him in this match. That out of the way, I still liked the action here. I really liked the flow of this match, where they just kept slightly turning up the volume until they got to 11. I thought that this was going to be a pain to recap from the bell, and they didn't do that. They built a really, really strong match that then got to what you would expect an Axiom versus Nathan Fraser match to be. I think they both gained a lot from this best of three series, which is just a really clever way to build a couple of guys that, I mean, between them had a total of like three or four wins on the brand. And I think Fraser's probably the right guy for the spot. He's a little more popular than Axiom right now, and he's a little more polished right now, I think, than Axiom, but it's not like either one of these guys is out there making errors. I like this, and we now have our field set. It is Nathan Fraser, Wesley, Carmelo Hayes, Von Wagner, and Oro Mensah. Could not have told you those five 2 months ago. It's wild, but really looking forward to all the possible dynamics in the ladder match. I meant to bring the Wesley versus Stacks match, 3 minutes and 57 seconds. Wesley goes over earlier into this, but I don't know. It was just the means to an end and the means to get Oro Mensah on TV, so probably not much there. So let's talk Axiom and Nathan Fraser, and if you decide that there's anything there, Wesley versus Stacks. Bruce?
So this match, I feel like it's right up there at the top of the list of best TV matches of the year for any promotion in the United States. This match was just
off the chart.
So fun, so good. So it wasn't just fluid, as you were saying, Kelly, but their timing, their chemistry with each other, there was no missed time spot, even by a fraction of a second. Everything was just meticulous it was fluid yet meticulous. And everything was just perfectly timed. Whatever they do with each other in the ring, it just works, because nothing seems like it's misplaced. Even some of the flashier stuff doesn't seem like it's there just to be flashy. It seemed like everything had a purpose, and the flashy stuff all had impact added onto it at the end to make it seem like, okay, I see why you did that. during the match, I mean, that ankle pick that Axiom hit on Fraser's leapfrog, I think was the best one I've ever seen hit. It was just so smooth, so good. These two just, there's not too many bad things I can say about this match. I think that Axiom is one of the people that is turning into a Shelton Benjamin, and the fact that they take the super kick bump so well, so very well. And the one spot that I thought that they had me where I go, oh, they're going to do a draw and have both of them in there, was when they both had rolled each other up and both shoulders were on the ground or on the mat. I thought that was a spot they might have had. They might have done it there. But, you know, the match kept going. As you said, the intensity of the pace just kept ramping up. And the crowd was into it from the beginning, even though, as you said, they built. They gave you time to build into the story and to get you to kind of invest in what they were doing. And in the end, I think it was the right call. These types of series and matches, you expect, you don't expect necessarily a clean finish here. So for it to be a quick a pin reversal, and not just a pin reversal, but that series of pin reversals at the end of the match, that was, I haven't seen that a combination like that pulled off so quickly and so fluidly. So if there's one thing that you want to go back and watch, just look, watch that last section, that segment of the match, and look at how many different pins they came together before Fraser finally gets the stacked pin on Axiom to get the win. So just all around really great match, really good stuff for both of them. Axiom came out looking like the Red Ranger, and it was just, you know, I think both men have a good future to look forward to. Fraser probably has a brighter future, just because, like you said, Fraser's a little more polished, I think, in terms of the how do I put this? The using the psychological aspects to enhance what they do in the ring, and he still has, I think, a little more technical acumen than Axiom does. But that's not to disrespect Axiom at all. They both are fantastic, and this was just a really good match.
If you liked the ending segment of this one, let me humbly suggest to you every Zack Sabre Jr. versus Sonata match in
New York. You don't have to humbly suggest that to me. Every Zack Sabre Jr. match, but yes, with Sonata
yes,
as well.
But yes, the Zack versus Sonata matches always end with those awesome trap pins. Just repeat.
Anything is better than the skull end that doesn't actually lock on. So.
Yeah, the skull end, I could. The thing that's the best about the skull end is that it can be reversed in so many awesome ways. That's why he does it, because you can do like 15 ways to get out of the skull end before he finally traps it on.
Well, I just figured that anyone who taps to it's tapping because his pits smell like just straight dank.
Right. It's a pit stop. I did a pit stop to my 15-year-old daughter today. She was like, pit stop? Really? And I was like, don't blame me. Blame wrestling. It's a blame.
Mm-hmm.
Blame
Sonata.
And Sonata. Nate, go ahead.
All right. Axiom and Nathan Frazier, I would agree 100% with Bruce in saying that this could take like match of the year, not just for like NXT, but potentially all of WWE, maybe wrestling this year. I don't know. This is a damn good match. This is a really good match. Now, I really enjoyed all three of the matches that these guys had in this best of three. In each match, they told a cohesive story. I don't remember if it was the first or second, but, you know, in one of them, you know, Nathan Frazier, I think it was his arm that you know, they were working on, that they were selling. You know, it just every match they told a story. This one was no different. The story of this one was just them going back and forth. Who's the best? And I feel like the offense was literally 50-50, maybe 51-49, and I couldn't even tell you who was the 51, who was the 49. You literally did not know who was going to win this match
as
up until
– capper, I will tell you that Axiom got in more offense.
Okay.
I will tell you that.
But I don't feel like it was by much. I don't feel like it was by much.
Probably 65-35. It was
really?
It was definitely
okay.
Him. But impact stuff was probably very...
That's what it was.
All right.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why it felt more like, you know, a little bit more even than skewed to me. But regardless, like, I feel like both of these guys came out better for it. even with Axiom and his loss here, they put on such a great series. And God, I mean, like Bruce said, you know, the ending series here where they just kept going back and forth, different pinning combinations, right? And then all of a sudden, Nathan Frazer wins, and like it came out of nowhere. I was not expecting it right there, which I love that. I love when there is a great finish that comes out of nowhere. It makes sense in the story. I don't think there's anything I would have changed about this match or this series for that matter. I think the Nathan Frazer is the right one to win, and I'm not just biased because we share the first name, same first name. He is a little bit better, a little bit in the ring. And again, as you guys said, that is to take nothing away from Axiom. He is a phenomenal talent in and of itself. But I think Frazer is just a little bit more polished. He is a little bit more well-known in the crowd. He's a little more popular. It makes sense for that to happen. Axiom's still a new character. I think maybe if he was wrestling as a kid and they kind of went with a kid, maybe, sure.
He's wrestling a kid? What?
Right.
I was holding back. Thanks for picking that up.
You saw one earlier. I saw that one. I ran right through it.
And I always encourage you to come out with bad jokes. Like, I'm going to always encourage that. But, you know, maybe if he was wrestling as a kid, then, you know, that had a little bit more name value to it. And maybe not much more than Nathan Frazer, but a little bit. So, you know, maybe something like that. But as Axiom, as this character, he's still new. He showed that he is a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, yeah, sure, he didn't win. He's not going into the North American title ladder match. But I still think I see big things in the future for Axiom as long as he wants to stay in the company and make them happen. These were just absolutely phenomenal matches. I wrote in the hits and misses that, like, if you're not watching NXT, if you're just keeping up with NXT through like Torch content, whether it be this show, hits and misses, Kelly and Bruce's you know, recap or what have you, go out of your way to watch at least this match, if not all three of this best of three. It's some of the best wrestling that NXT has put out this year, hands down.
I'd love to cheer for somebody in sports just because we had the same first name. Doesn't happen a lot in men's sports for me. Like, what am I going to do? Am I going to become the world's biggest Kelly Olynyk fan?
I mean,
I am the world's biggest
Bruce
Kelly Olynyk fan.
Yeah.
Bruce Brown, who else do you have?
Bruce Bowen.
Yeah.
Bruce Smith. I mean, NFL Hall of Famer.
Oh, there you go. Bruce Smith is, yeah.
NFL Hall of Famer.
In fact, there's two NFL Hall of Famers named Bruce Smith. I think the first one's a Hall of Famer also. He was like the 50s or 60s. Yeah, it's happened. I Kelly's I don't get. They're in the Brazzers Hall of Fame. let's not
twice in a night.
Well, we still haven't even talked about that. Yeah, you might have, we're there.
Yeah. Okay.
Kiana James versus Thea Hale. We got the Kiana James segment with the girl who she just calls G. I don't know how to talk about these segments without talking about the fact that I think that the joke is that they are meant to seem like they are from porn films. I want that to sound like I'm kidding so badly it hurts, but I can't see these without thinking that's the intent. They look intentionally cheap. The smart girl doesn't look, she looks like a regular girl, a regular pretty girl cosplaying. And then the associate, the assistant looks like she looks and wears what she wears. I just don't see what these scenes are meant to evoke otherwise, because they sure aren't good cinema. I don't know how to talk about these scenes anymore, because that's literally what I see every time that they put one of these up. And then we got the match, Thea Hale versus Kiana James. This went 78 seconds, but that's only because the bell rang before the Robert Stone segment. The bell rings, Robert Stone comes in, says that this should be a celebratory time for him because Von Wagner got into the ladder match, but instead he's been humiliated by Thea Hale. He runs at Thea Hale, who immediately back body drops him. And then she decides to distract herself for the maximum amount of time, despite the fact that a match is going on. Kiana James hits her finisher, 401k. And that is that. Kiana James gains nothing from a win like this. And she literally was just a meat puppet in a scene that did not involve her at all. So certainly the scene that she was in earlier, which was very terrible, still did more for her than this, this match. I don't know, just kind of messy stuff here, but I just, Thea Hale's, her engagement, her excitement truly is infectious. And when I see her, I'm happy. And that is the intent, Bruce.
I just keep cackling that they named her finisher 401k. It's too funny. And her finisher itself, it's a Sling Blade Flatliner, so it's not bad. It's a good finisher. It's just the name. A Sling Blade Flatliner. And she hit it pretty well tonight, too. You know, it was sloppy. It was pretty crisply. So that aside, in the earlier segment, my biggest note was that Chase U is going to get a campus, baby. Let's go, Chase U. Woohoo! Finally. And then here, you know, Mr. Stone's there to do what he does. He had another backstage segment where he got laughed at. Von Wagner looked at him and yelled at him and told him to cut the BS and whatnot. But, yeah, I don't think this did anything for anybody involved because while Chase U came out, it was for 2 minutes where Thea Hale got hit with one move because she distracted herself, looking like a dumb baby face, and they lost the match, and that was that. So, yeah, there was momentum that you could have used, even if you had Chase U losing after Andre Chase rolled up Carmelo Hayes and got that victory, but they've dwindled that, or they've not dwindled, what's the word? They've wasted that.
Squandered.
And now, squandered, there we go, they squandered that, and now Chase U's just back to being what they were before, and I think they can be a little more than what they were, but they needed to use that Hayes pin to actually get them there.
By the way, 8 matches tonight, Kiana James, the one and only heel to go to the pay window with a victory, and she did one move. So there you go.
That's a good night out for heels.
It's a good night. Yeah, it's a good night.
One heel wins with one move. Very efficient stuff.
Speaking of which, I swear, when I was a kid, there was a match I saw, and it was with, I think it was when he was it Black Jack Bradshaw or something? And I think it was against Fatu. What was the
Make
the,
a Difference Fatu?
Make a Difference Fatu.
Yeah.
I swear, Fatu got in the ring, got hit with one clothesline, and that was it. And that was the first time I ever saw the clothesline from hell. So.
Well, it did work out for Fatu.
Yeah.
And just had to find a much, much different character to do so. And his many sons doing well in New Japan.
Including Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
WWE, yeah.
Right. Yeah, he's got sons every damn place. Dude made it. Nate?
Yeah, I don't really have a whole lot to add about the Kiana James and Thea Hale match. So the only thing I'll talk about is the things that you guys hadn't really talked about, and that's Thea Hale. I don't care what anybody says. I absolutely love Thea Hale. We haven't really seen a whole lot of her in the ring yet. I have a feeling there's probably a reason for that. But there's something about her. I think she has that it factor. And obviously she is over-exaggerating everything that she does. But the simple fact that she is, 18, 19 years old, whatever it is, she's going on national TV every week and making an absolute fool out of herself, but like in the best way possible at the same time, making a fool of herself. That says something. Like if you're able to just go on TV and just act like a complete idiot and like just so happy and so bubbly and all of that. I think she's definitely got, there's something there. And I think she's got I want to say a relatively high ceiling. I got to see obviously what happens with her in the ring. you know, we've seen a couple matches, but as time kind of goes on, you know, obviously she's still learning. She's still young. She's still green. But I definitely see something there with her. I think the energy that she shows is going to, like, is basically going to be her best friend in this industry. If she continues to show that kind of energy and dedication to a character, like, she's going to go far. I just kind of wanted to throw that out there. Cause I don't know, my two cents on her anyway.
She's not afraid to make a fool of herself in the best way possible.
Exactly. And just, you know, like me, I like to go out there. And, I mean, I don't
That's
like to go make
you
a fool of myself.
You have very
but
little
it's,
choice in the matter.
Right. But you know what?
I embrace
I embrace the tomfoolery, okay? I embrace it. I hope it's endearing, you know, so somewhat. It or at is. Least it makes you laugh, you know? That's all I care about.
Definitely
it
makes
is endearing. I don't know if I have hire and fire. I mean, I've gotten people on this show. But I never fired you, Nate, so there's that.
No. Although there was a time I didn't think I was coming back.
Really?
Yeah, there was a show I did, and actually you and Tom brought it up to me privately afterwards, like a few weeks later, and but I was like
early 2.0 days.
Yeah, no, it was
before 2.0.
It was maybe like my fourth or fifth time actually on the show, and like I was overtired, and I think both of them thought I was drunk.
We did. I went to him and I was like, was he? It was a lot of circular. You know what? Let's not.
Yeah.
I just remember you didn't have fun during the 2.0 early days either. So.
Oh yeah, no. I was missing my black and gold.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's not going to get you off the show. I mean, if anything, it was great to have people, you know.
The differing opinions.
Right. Yeah, that was like salad days for Nate. Good stuff.
Oh, wait. So, okay, you already brought up old Greg. We're going for salad fingers, too?
I apparently. We're covering all of it. Okay, let's go to your mid-show main event. Inoue and Blade versus Briggs and Jensen versus the Dyad. In 12
Easy
minutes,
a fuzzy little man, Peach.
And 31 seconds, Inoue and Blade win this one. Obviously pretty deadly. Got their segment pretending to be football fans with the paint and the beer. And they're wonderful. They're treasures.
They're so good. They're so good.
They're the greatest thing. I don't want to sound like I'm exaggerating, but I love them more than my kids put together. I'm exaggerating. But, yes, pretty deadly. Really good stuff. 2-4-6-8. Who do we think is really great?
Nate.
Yes. Inoue and Blade are going to get their biggest shot and their biggest spot as they move on. I don't know. I guess I thought this was fairly obvious. Like, the only doubt here is the fact that you don't know if they think Inoue and Blade are ready for this spot because, you know, Briggs and Jensen were already there. They already had their cup of coffee, and the Dyad are heels, and that doesn't really work with Pretty Deadly and the fact that Pretty Deadly can genuinely create heat. So Inoue and Blade go over. This match was 10 times more difficult to cover than Axiom Nathan Fraser.
It was so
much harder because Axiom and Fraser worked a match that went toward that spot. This match was at 11 the whole time. And I dislike that less than I thought I would in this context because it always felt like things were leading somewhere. I don't know. That's very nebulous, and I don't know how to explain it exactly. But I was into this match, and I was into the segments giving shine to each team. I dug this, and I really like Inoue, and Blade is pretty fine. So, he's good, but he's not Idris Inoue. He's not. And he's not only good, but improved. But Inoue is just, I think that there's
something
potential
there.
Money in that kid. Yeah. So at any rate, They win. They move on to face Pretty Deadly in one of those matches where it seems easy to call from a typical booking standpoint, but Pretty Deadly could move north at any moment.
Oh, so yeah.
Very hard to say.
Yeah, so I didn't dislike this match either. It was not my favorite match of the night, but it was certainly entertaining. Again, you know, triple threat matches, especially triple threat tag team matches, kind of they get a little weird for me because, you know, it's no DQ, yet you're still tagging in and out. Why are you tagging in and out? Why the hell are you tagging in and out? It's a no DQ match. Don't tag in. You're not going to get disqualified. God damn it. Anyway, that's just a pet peeve. That was my biggest thing of this match. Just, we can just keep seeing people tagging in and out. Who's the legal man? Yeah, sure. You need a legal man. Fine. That if that's the one rule, whatever. But, like, it should be, I don't know, like, the heels, in my opinion, should be taking advantage of the fact that you don't need to be tagging in and out. And the first heel tag team in the history of pro wrestling that does that in a triple threat tag team match, like, I don't know, I'll give them, like, 10 grand or so. I don't have 10 grand to give you, but I'll pretend I'll give you 10 grand or something. It'll be great to see. I hope it happens someday. I also really like Inoue and Blade. It's weird, though. I don't feel like they're at a championship shot level caliber yet, and I don't know why. I feel like they're amazing in the ring, especially Inoue. Inoue is definitely the standout of the group, or of the team rather. But I feel like their booking to this point has been almost very similar to like Casey Catanzaro and Katana Chance and Caden Carter. They kind of seem to sometimes get a push. Obviously not right now. I mean, they are the tag champs, but like they would sometimes get a push and then they'd fall down the card. They'd sometimes get a push and fall down the card. And I feel like that's kind of where Inoue and Blade have been. They've never really gotten any real significant wins before tonight. However, you know, there's a time to change that, I guess. And apparently that's tonight. I'm not against it by any stretch of imagination. So I don't want it to sound like I'm against them getting the win because, hey, you got to build team somehow. I didn't think they had a chance in hell to win. I really expected Briggs and Jensen to come out victorious here. It seemed to make the most sense to kind of progress the feud between Pretty Deadly and Briggs and Jensen that kind of got blown off a little bit, but yeah, they could have gone back to it. And I also feel like the company is really kind of going in on Josh Briggs, especially. He's obviously the standout of his team as well. So I kind of thought that was the direction they were going to go. I'm pleasantly surprised at the direction they went. I think it's going to be a great match, but Pretty Deadly. I feel like they're going to mesh with Inoue and Blade's style very well. So it should be it should just be a fun match to watch. I think it's a very low chance that we see Idris Inoue and Malik Blade get the Malik was a D&D character. So come on, give me that one.
In your defense, Wade said that.
Yeah.
It's so weird to me that he said that, but he did.
Because
there's also Merrick and Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's Vic's thing.
Vic said Inoue about three different ways tonight, too. He said Inoue, 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 or something like that. So he just don't listen to Vic. But then there's Booker. Oh, my. Don't listen to the commentary at all.
Don't listen at all.
Yeah, Wade Barrett's gone. Just pretend commentary doesn't exist anymore.
I
don't even remember.
Once football season's over and Pat McAfee comes back, that they bring Wade Barrett back to NXT.
God, I hope
but I mean, I you know, Wade's getting that sweet, sweet main roster money. Like, I've got to.
Yeah.
I don't want him not to be that successful because he has earned it.
Yeah, but man, he was so good down here. I don't remember what the hell I was saying at this point. So I'm going to just say it probably wasn't super important and we can move on.
Okie dokie. Yeah, that went some places. Bruce, did I throw to you?
No. Again, just taking a step back, if you had never seen NXT before and you just watched the entrance of Inoue and Blade, you'd probably think, one, why the hell are these two a tag team? And two, Inoue definitely is the one that you keep your eye on. There's just no question about it. And while Malik Blade didn't have a burgundy vest on tonight, he still had his vest on tonight. So I think that here, the only reason I was kind of hoping that Dyad might win is because I just wanted to see Pretty Deadly and them on the mic, see how that went, just because I feel like if anybody could make Dyad seem to work on the mic and play off of them well and really agitate Gacy to get him off of his character that he's presenting a believable way, it'd be pretty deadly. But here, Inoue and Blade are the right call, not only because you do probably want a babyface team against them, but let's say you do want Pretty Deadly to go up and you want them to score off against the Usos or something. I think there are, considering the teams they've already beat, which were pretty much everybody, and the fan reaction behind the other teams, this is probably the, if you were to make a title change, I think this could be just like Carter and Chance, one of those feel-good moments for them, and it's just all about how they build afterward. I think the thing that I would trust more with them than I do with Carter and Chance, is, although they have proved, Inoue to me is definitely, his charisma, his presence, and his promo abilities are definitely better than the other, than Chance and Carter. And I think he'd be able to carry them more in those segments as champions than, and be able to spell Blade a bit until he hopefully improves more there. I mean, in the ring, he's definitely improved, but I feel like he's still a bit hesitant on the mic. So I think get here with them, and it's a good call, but only if you want Pretty Deadly to move up. Pretty Deadly, of course, just fantastic. Could not get enough of what they're saying, what they're doing. And when talking about Josh Briggs, it's obvious that they have, he's been one of Triple H's favorites. I believe Triple H signed him either when he was still Evolved champion or right after he lost the title so he could come to NXT. So there's, out of the two, I mean, Jensen just doesn't really do anything for me. And Briggs did have one very impressive spot today on the outside when he tossed Malik Blade onto the ropes, and as he bounced off, hit him with a lariat in midair. That was pretty impressive. But, you know, I'm still not high on either of them, especially as much as Triple H is on Briggs. I think Inoue and Blade could be a good call to make the title change if you want Pretty Deadly to move to Raw or SmackDown. And regardless, even if they lose, this is going to be a good way for Inoue and Blade to show that they have the metal to work a championship tag team match that doesn't involve multi-teams. It's just a one-on-one tag team match, and I think they couldn't have asked for better opponents to work with them in this type of a match. They're Pretty Deadly, because they're just all-around polished, everything they do, and if there's anything that I'm confident about in this match, it's that especially Inoue is going to have at least one or two huge spots that will make fans be talking about them, even if they lose, because of how memorable his spots were during the match.
In the last hour, JD Drake tweeted, and he retweeted the video that WWE put up of Briggs doing that spot that was really cool on the outside. He said, "Josh and I worked in Evolve for a couple of years together, and I was doing this move the whole time. I guess I made an impression."
JD Drake's a good wrestler.
So there you go. All right. Valentina Ferois versus Indy Hartwell. Indy wins this one in 3:34 with a superplex from the second turnbuckle.
That's what I said too.
This is, this is your, that's a Survivor Series finish. When somebody's got to get beat quick, in clothesline or something like this. Sanga and Valentina had a scene before this where he tried to pump her up, but kindly Uncle Sanga might be gone, because during this match, Valentina looked out, but Sanga had already left with Veer Mahan, who had shown up and whispered something in Sanga's ear, and then the two of them left. What is it? He said, "We should be a tag team," which means right now you need to leave. not entirely sure what he said, but this was pressing business, you guys, that could not have happened at any other time, but a time when Sanga actually had his only televised
appearance
that was scheduled.
We are struggling tonight.
Yes.
We all are.
I'm baffled by the fact that this was, there's always a better way to do it. But yes, what was that here? I don't know. But Indy goes over Valentina. She wins. I think Indy has new music, but it's so generic, I'm not sure. It could be that I've heard this music a thousand times, and only today I was like, okay, well.
I want to say they've used it at least once or twice before, but it's definitely new.
Okay.
I'm just wondering why she isn't on Raw with Dexter Lumis already. Is that the mixed tag team match?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I mean, she's had some real clunkers in her last five matches. There were like two that were pretty problematic, and I would suggest that's why.
Yeah, I don't think she's necessarily main roster ready. I'd like to see it storyline-wise, but yeah. I think she belongs down there.
If you bring her up, you can kind of mask her by just having her be a second for Dexter Lumis on Raw while having her work dark matches or main events or whatever. There are other ways to do that. And right now in NXT, she is definitely just treading water. So why not? I mean, just why not?
Yeah.
Just get her out of this. It seems like she's clogging up the division here. And I don't mean that. That sounds so negative, but it just seems like she has not moved up or down or done anything in the longest time in NXT. Her moment with Dexter was the first time she was relevant on that show in a while. But anyway, Indy over Valentina in 334. That happened. Joe Gacy and the Dyad and Hoodie Guy showed up in a scene. The Hoodie Guy just following them. Might be Hoodie Girl. Probably is. Not sure. Did
Sloan Jacobs.
Sure. Oh, yeah, sure. Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark had a scene that, I kid you not, this was by far the best thing Nikita Lyons has done on her entire run in NXT. And I mean, it's not close. This is so far ahead. Like, this is not a real memorable scene, but it's the least I've disliked Nikita Lyons. I will say that. This scene humanized this team as well as it can. And I walked away from this and I was like, Nikita was pretty good here. They didn't ask a lot of her, but she came off real and not noxious and irritating. God, even when I'm giving her a compliment, I'm trying. And then Quincy Elliott had a quick scene with Hank Walker, called him Big Hanky. And then Hanky was really proud of this. So maybe he's going to be Hanky from now on. Anything on that bit of cleanup, Bruce?
Yeah. So quickly on the Quincy Elliott Hanky thing, I need the story to be told on how Quincy Elliott befriended Hanky and the entire security guard staff, because this is the oddball pairing of all oddball pairings, and I just need to know how this happened. I mean, that is the biggest mystery coming out of tonight's show to me. When it comes to the Joe Gacy, Cameron Grimes thing, so my first guess as to who he might bring down with to him was Viking Raiders, but then their vignette last week made it seem like they're going to it doesn't seem like the right time to do that. And so I was just thinking, oh, you know, Los Lotharios, just some random teams. But if it's a team he trusts, or maybe a person he trusts, then I can't think of anyone right now he has ties to on Raw or SmackDown that were in NXT with him. I did jokingly say Braun Strowman as his one partner, which I think could work, just because I think they could just do it quickly and get out of there. But it's a good mystery that they're doing right now, because there isn't a distinct answer that any of us can really say regarding that situation. And then there was one, you said the match between Valentina and Indy. So, yeah, not the greatest match. I think my biggest question here is now with Ulyssa Leon out with the torn ligaments, and Sangha now not in her corner, what does this mean for Valentina Ferroz? And is she going to become, like, is she going to take this departure from Sangha as that chip on her shoulder and just become some sort for lack of a better term, some kind of fiend in the women's division, just go on a run here? Or is she just going to be forgotten and left off TV? And I think there's more danger of that than a possibility of the former. But the other thing is, I'm very excited to see the possible return of Indus Share. And for me, I want to see Indus Share not come out like they did with the then Malcolm Bivens in kind of the quote traditional Indian garb, but I want to see them come out in suits and just you know, what's the word? Just stunt on everybody. I mean, because they look good. And if I look that good, I would be doing it too.
Five minutes of disrobing and 1 minute of beating their opponent.
There we go. Best squash match you could ever ask for. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Nate.
All right. So as far as like the Gacy Grimes thing, who are his opponents or his partners going to be rather? I'm torn. I'm actually not torn. I'm not sure. But the only thing that I can think of is we did just see LA Knight revert to being LA Knight. So there's that. And he does have a history with Cameron Grimes. Now, that's one person. I don't know who the other person would be. Because, as cool would it be to see Ted DiBiase get back in the ring again? I mean, you know, I don't know if that would be cool at the same time. So there's that. I'm not really sure who else it could potentially be.
Loomis and Gargano? I don't know.
Yeah, who does he trust? He's always been kind of a solo dude.
Right. And the only person that I could see him potentially trusting at this point would be LA Knight, because they had so much respect for each other. And, you know, after so many wars back and forth, like, that's the only thing that seems to like make any sense to me. And like, I've gone up and down the main roster, and I can't see anybody else. Like, nobody else comes to mind that had on the main roster that had a feud with Cameron Grimes or was aligned with Cameron Grimes where he would trust. LA Knight's the only one that makes sense.
You know
to
what
me.
We're missing? Is there anyone that was in the UK that he had any interactions with?
I can't think of anything.
Did he anything with Tyler Bate? I mean, Tyler Bate.
It could be Tyler Bate, actually. He's still a face on the show, even though he hasn't been on. And technically, he was in the UK before he made his stint back at NXT. That definitely works.
You don't have Trent Seven anymore, but I don't know. I don't know who that other one is.
But they don't necessarily have to make it 3-on-3. They could go 3-on-2 and just be like, Grimes only has one person you trust, and that's Tyler Bate. I think they can make it work, because Dyak or Schizel can still make it that, if they win, you still don't have enough support. We're the ones you need, Cameron Grimes, yada, yada. So I think there's ways to do it, but then I think if you put Bate and Grimes in there, you want them to win. So the fact that we're talking this much about it is good for them.
Five secret people. How are not at least three of them Dante Chen?
The pick your poison match, it's Dante Chen for each of them.
Right. It's got to be.
Wait a minute. I bet you whatever happened to Duke Hudson.
But why would he trust him? They had a few.
Losing in 30 seconds? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, again, I could see – I'm kind of trying to go, think outside the box here. But same reason he'd trust LA Knight. They went to war together, and they found a mutual respect. Like, that's – I can see them saying the same thing for Duke Hudson.
I mean, I thought about Hudson too, but I think losing your hair to Grimes like that might not be a way that I don't. I just, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a stretch. It's a total stretch.
PWTorch NXT at gmail.com. This comes from Jared Buhager. Hey team, it's JB from Detroit. JD McDonagh manipulating his opponents against each other is a classic WWE trope that I'm not a fan of. I honestly find this writing rather lazy. What do you guys feel is a more creative way they could accomplish this goal? As always, love the show and go VIP. I'm actually all for the heel manipulating the faces against each other. Very for it, but it was done poorly tonight. It was literally just him moving out of the way of a move. Like, it wasn't his. It didn't come off. At the end of the show, it looked like he was celebrating the culmination of this brilliant plan. But his brilliant plan was to get out of the way of a move, which you would want to do anyway. It was the execution here that left something to be desired. I think McDonagh is the kind of character who specifically should be trying to pit baby faces against each other. And you should be able to do that with Bron Breakker because he's basically a lost puppy. You're just dragging around. Like, you should be able to do that with Bron Breakker. I think that all the pieces here are in place to make this work. I just don't know. I do know that this was not the best way to do it because it was everything's distractions and stupid misunderstandings that could be solved by watching the show. Okay. Kevin Catani says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I have two questions from tonight's show. One, was that a heel turn for Braun or just an exclamation point on the upcoming match? Just an exclamation point. Two, was Alba's win over former champ a signal of good things to come? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. I think it was a signal of things to come, but this isn't the first time that I've said Mandy's reign's over. And I definitely would have said it tonight, but the Sonya Deville appearance throws everything into doubt, which is what it's for. And I can't wait to see how that changes the show. I'm very intrigued by it. Probably the most interesting storyline thing that happened tonight was Sonya Deville. Bruce?
Yeah, so the thing with McDonough, like you said, his character is the one who's supposed to be very cerebral, manipulative, intelligent, cunning. So him trying to one-up the baby faces through mind games, to me, makes a lot of sense. However, as you said, it wasn't done right here. It wasn't done well at all. It didn't fit his character. And one thing that for me that I always try and discuss when I'm doing my reports is coherency. And if there's no coherency of character and action, then it doesn't work. And here there was no coherency between how his character has been portrayed and the actions that he took. Now, like you said, it could just be a circumstance. You just want to get out of the way. But nothing that he said actually manipulated them into wanting to hurt each other. McDonough was the one who was being aimed for by Ilya Dragunov, or Ilyanov, as Nate likes to say. So, the end of the show, I think, helped a little bit in terms of saving it, just because, again, he likes to think of himself as that, but the execution in terms of, or the process to get there wasn't done very well. And like, you know, as you said earlier, it was more the spear at the end was more of a receipt for the, not receipt in like, oh, you stiffed me, so I'm going to get you back in the ring, but storyline receipt for the headbutt, the torpedo earlier in the night in that first segment. And yeah, you know, Mandy Rose, the thing with Mandy Rose, usually they start bringing up historic title reigns and the number of days when they try to signal that the reign is going to come to an end. For the most part, it didn't happen with New Day. You know, they got the record. But I've been noticing recently that every show with the Usos that they come out, they mention how many days they've been tag team champion and tag team champion, by the way, not tag team champions, tag team champion, and how close they are to Demolition and the New Day. So for me, I feel like they've been doing that more with Mandy Rose with each passing title defense. It's just that I think outside of Zoe Stark, the other opponents haven't been people that we necessarily believed could have beaten her. But if it does come down to a match between her and Deville, I think it's very believable that Deville would win. Back to what Nate was saying earlier about kind of the differences between them as heels, Deville is a trained MMA fighter, a mixed martial artist, who, whereas Mandy Rose has a different background in athletic swimsuit competition modeling. So there's differences in their athleticism, but the nature of being an MMA, I think, gives Deville a more, not just a sense of legitimacy, but her offense looks more believable, like it hurts more because of that background, how she's able to lay it in but still be safe. And so I feel like if they do go that route again, Deville is someone that you can believe will win, and it's just what is the dynamic that's going to play out between now and then between not just Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, but between the four of them. And what, and again, this is the most that I've been excited about Toxic Attraction in a while. And it's not because necessarily of them, it's because of the inclusion now of, or the insertion, I guess I should say, of Sonya Deville.
Hey, if the mute button doesn't get me at least once an episode. I really don't have a whole lot to add that you guys hadn't talked about already. Alba Fire, I have a feeling she's going to be in the main event title scene at some point. But yeah, you know, like you guys are saying, Sonya Deville, that's a complete monkey wrench right now. It's like, because right now, I mean, I'm going under the assumption she's not going to be turning on her yet, although that is kind of what I want to see. I think that Sonya is probably going to work with them for a couple of weeks, make it seem like, you know, she's in their corner, maybe even get Mandy through the title match at Halloween Havoc and then turn on her or something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I definitely think that there is a high ceiling for Alba Fire, though. So there is that. Other than that, though, yeah, there's really not a whole heck of a lot that I've got to add other than, you know, that you guys haven't already talked about.
All right, folks, that, I believe, is our show. I'm Kevin Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games, Nate.
I am Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the hits and misses for NXT, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys if you'd like to check it out. And if you'd like to also check out my YouTube channel at DEGETIME, Deej Time on YouTube, we take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. And hopefully within the next couple weeks, we'll be going back to weekly content. That is the plan. Fingers crossed.
Bruce.
Hi, I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. Everyone, stay ill enough and try not having an aneurysm on your way to the ring.
Ah.
All right. Cheers, folks, and we will see you in 7.